Okay, hello everybody. I'm Sebastian and I'm a member of the Learn team, and today I will talk a little bit about the applications of OAuth in OpenACS. Short overview, I will give you an introduction to OAuth, what was the motivation behind using the framework, and also about its architecture and how it's implemented in OpenACS. And I will also show you some application areas which also occur in Learn, and will also show some demos. Short topic about me. I attended the business school until 2016, and I did my A levels in Wirtschaftsinformatik. We had this subject, I guess, 4 out of 5 years, and I was always making my schoolmates happy, holding presentations, which might have taken, I guess, 1 or 2 hours or so, so that they could do something else, maybe sleeping or something like that. And in 2019, I became a co-worker in some Ruby on Rails-based projects. For example, I did the backend for Nora Sports, which is a sport article retailer at the Herrn-Alser-Straße in Vienna. And in October 2022, I became a member of the Learn team. In July, I finished my bachelor here at VU, and today morning I received a notification that my diploma documents are available to pick up, and I'm very happy about that because I want to continue with a master at TU Wien in October. So, now to OAuth. What does it do? OAuth enables a third-party application to gain limited access to an HTTP service. That means it authorizes it, either on behalf of the resource owner or on behalf of the application, or one also says the client. Version 1.0 was defined in RFC 5849, and it only supported the authorization on the behalf of the resource owner. And with version 2.0, there was also the possibility given to authorize on behalf of the application itself. And it uses tokens instead of the resource owner's credentials. You might say now, okay, fine, but what's the motivation behind it? Why should one use it? Well, there are two aspects. One is the business perspective. I mean, nowadays, the usage of third-party applications almost becomes inevitable. However, it leads to system breaks between different UIs of some of multiple applications, and of course this leads to workflow interruptions and to a bad user experience, and also to security issues. I mean, the users might tend to use the same password for every application they have to log into, and of course that's an issue. And the objective of OAuth is to improve the integration of these third-party clients, and also to contribute to security standards, for example, when performing authentication, for example, with Microsoft Azure, one has to do the multi-factor authentication, which of course adds another security layer. And also to improve the user experience. I mean, it's rather convenient to not have to log on to every application you're using. And now to the technical perspective. Well, the main objective is to overcome the drawbacks of the traditional client-server authentication, which I will discuss in a minute. The third-party applications there use or store the credentials of the resource owners. Moreover, the permissions cannot be set on a granular level. For example, which resources is the client authorized to access, and also the duration. Because access tokens, they will expire at some point. And also, the identical credentials are used for multiple clients, which of course is a security issue, because if there's one system breach in one client, then there's of course the possibility that this will occur in other clients as well. And there, the traditional authentication model is illustrated. The client requests the credentials and is given them and uses them, for example, password and username, to authorize on the resource server, and then is, of course, given the protected resource. And what is the difference now to the OAuth protocol? Well, there is another layer, a third layer added in the form of the authorization server. First of all, the client has to perform an authorization request to the resource owner and is then given the authorization grant, which might be the client secret and the client ID. And this already differs from the password and username perspective. And it uses this authorization grant it passes that to the authorization server and is then provided an access token. And it uses this access token to get the resource from the resource server then. So how is OAuth2 implemented in OpenACS? It's implemented within the XOAuth package, and it was originally developed by members of Knowledge Markets. There are two former members here today. One is Michael Aram, and the other one is Gustav Neumann. And what are the application areas? I mean, we discovered in Learn three main application areas. First of all, the app communication, which is the exchange of information with external applications over REST interfaces, for example, MS Teams over the Microsoft Graph API. Moreover, LTI tools. Communication with external applications in the context of learning management systems. For example, with BigBlueButton, which is an open source conference software, or Jupyter, of what we heard already today. And third is the authentication of users. With single sign-on on multiple software systems, for example, with Microsoft Azure AD or GitHub. Let's get into it. First topic, communicating with REST APIs. How is it done in OpenACS? Well, in the OpenACS config, one can define an NS section for example, here the Microsoft Graph API, and it already differs from the usual credentials one can be provided. I mean, for example, the OpenAI only provides the client ID and the client secret. Microsoft provides also the tenant ID. And that's exactly the reason why I illustrated this class diagram here, because the XOREST class is a parent of MS Graph, and XOREST only includes the client ID and the client secret, and Microsoft, the MS Graph class, also includes the tenant. And then, for example, one can perform this proc defined in MS Box, team get, and has to provide an argument called team ID, and then one gets the Microsoft team and the data that belongs to it. And now we are going to see a demo. I hope it will work. I mean, it's a video. I wrote a little package called MS Teams, which uses the XOAuth APIs, which are defined there. And basically what you will see is going to be an UI where you can create an MS Team in .learn. You see, I have no MS Teams there. I'm logged in into Teams. Now I will switch over to .learn and create a team in a community. I mean, I set here a description, but it's actually not necessary, so it's not a required field. yeah, it's there. And also it will be in a short while in the browser in MS Teams. It's already here. Exactly. So let's continue with the communication with LTI services. LTI stands for Learning Tools Interoperability, and it's a standard allowing the integration of learning applications into learning management systems. It's developed by the IMS Global Learning Consortium. There are some versions available. The most important ones are LTI up to 1.1, because it uses OAuth 1.0, and LTI 1.3, which is already using the next version. Basically, there are two components involved: the tool provider, which is a server running the external tool, for example, Jupyter, and the tool consumer, which is the actual LMS, for example, Learn. And it's the same process more or less in the configuration. One has to define the NS section, and on the server, for example, in case of Jupyter, the shared secret and the OAuth consumer key are generated with the OpenSSL rand command. And in ExoWiki, there's an include land already defined, launch Jupyter, it's called, which does the whole thing. So it provides a button, more or less, which includes a form that includes all the credentials that are necessary to open and to also get access to Jupyter then. And one can see it there, so it's basically an instantiation, and the render proc then calls the class and instantiates the class XOLTI Jupyter, and this class fetches or gets all the data from the credentials which are defined in the OpenACS config file. And the third use case is user authentication. And the authorization code grant flow is defined in RFC 6749. What are the most important components there? The first is the authorization endpoint, which is, for example, this HTTPS login microsoftonline.com URL. And then, of course, we have a lot of query parameters. And the required ones is the response type, at least in terms of Microsoft, and the client ID, which is, as we have already seen, defined in the OpenACS config file. And there are also some optional parameters, but somehow they are recommended. First and foremost, the redirect URI, and depending on what you want to do, in this case, it's the user authentication. The scope is somewhat relevant here, especially the profile scope, since it provides the client information about the user. And if this this scope parameter is not sent during the request, we might encounter problems mapping this data from, for example, Microsoft Asia with our internal user data, which we will need then. Yeah, and what is the response? The response are so-called claims, which are then mapped to the OpenACS internal data here, as we can see here, as is done in MSBox, in the get user data proc. We receive a lot of claims back, but most important are the family name, given name, and the UPN, which is the email address, and they're going to be mapped to the last name, first names, and email parameters. Exactly. And this is done within the perform login proc, in the authorized procs, where the data is set, then the user ID is derived, and then we can perform the AD user login proc to log in the user in OpenACS. Exactly. And this is now a demo of how it works on a vanilla instance. So I have here a plain instance, click on login via Azure. I log in with my credentials. course, we have a multi-factor authentication. And there we go, we are logged in. Okay. Let's go, let's summarize it and provide an outlook to future work. I mean, we just talked about OAuth2. It's a free layer authorization procedure. And with the principle, never use the resource owner credentials to authorize multiple clients. I mean, that's the most important point here. And as I already talked about, we discovered here three application areas, which are also implemented in the OAuth package, in OpenACS, communication with REST APIs, LTI services, and user authentication. And for the future work, it might be an option. One could look into restructuring the XOAuth package and also update some functionalities. Also, some functionalities probably should be added. I discovered some doing my work here at the Learn team. For example, list deleted teams and restore deleted teams, because they can be restored within 30 days after they have been deleted. One could look into the separation of functionalities into dedicated package. I mean, for example, the MS Prox, including the MS Graph, API related Prox, and also the authorization Prox for Microsoft Azure AD. It's quite a large file, and I mean, we have now more or less three components in this package. More than three. One could think about, for example, putting the Microsoft related Prox or the Microsoft Team related Prox into a dedicated package, for example, Microsoft Teams, as I did, as I showed before. And concerning this Microsoft Teams package, it's also the thing that I'm not really sure if I will make it public or not, because it's quite funny, and I will remember that for quite a long time. Mr. Neumann said for not such a long time ago, "Who cares?" I mean, it's also the thing. One has to think about whether this package is then used or not, and if it provides real value or not. And this is something one should really evaluate before one makes a package public. So, thank you for joining the conference. And if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Antonio. Thanks, Sebastian, for the presentation. My colleagues from Italy expressed a lot of interest in the integration with the Microsoft authentication. And I wanted to ask you, what do you think is the best way? I know there are provisions in the code in case the user still does not exist, that this is created on the fly. What would be, in your opinion, the best way to also attach further callbacks to this action? For instance, not only create the user, but also make the user member of certain groups.
Okay. Well, this is actually an interesting question, and I mean, one could somehow make the user a member of somehow a default group, but it will be, I mean, one needs to think about then if one wants to make the user a member of some dedicated groups, whatever. I mean, this will be.
Maybe I can also give a short answer here. I mean, you can configure for this package whether you want to, I mean, first of all, what should happen in general with users which are not known? Do you want to reject this user or you want to create the user? If you want to create the user, you can say, I want to create this user as a .learn user or something else. You can configure this. If you create this as a .learn user, you can configure what should be the default group versus where the person is coming from. It's just configuration. And without programming, you can do this. If you want to have more detailed information, you simply can subclass this. I mean, just write whatever you want to have in one method, which is called create a new user, and you can write there whatever application thing you want to have there. I mean, it's just, there are three relevant calls for deleting user, creating user, and whatever. I think it's quite simple to extend it from this point of view. But for all of the OAuth stuff there, and therefore it's not only true, the whole thing, for the MS Team thing, but also if you have other OAuth, whatever, providers, identity providers. And you can also, we have now this GitHub inside because it was easy to implement, but you can also add whatever other stuff, like whatever Google accounts and so on. You say you want to identify with Google, and you can say afterwards, okay, this should happen this way. And also, if you have one application where different subsites are residing, I mean, at the end, you can say, when a startup create authentication objects, and you can define for every subsite one or more, many of these authentication objects. That means you can say, in this case, this subsite should behave different than if somebody comes, a new user from the other subsite, and so on. That means it is also multiple, capable to talk at the same time to multiple identity providers in different kind of configurations. Maybe Malte?
So you've shown the Teams integration, and first of all, like, I wished I had looked into XOAuth a year ago, because then I could have saved myself a day of writing that one from scratch on my own. But this being said, we're actually already in the process of integrating OneDrive, and think about replacing basically the content repository for File Manager, like same idea, but literally just storing everything in OneDrive and doing more integration into the Microsoft Office 365 packages. Are there interests on your side as well? Like, I would be really interested in the Teams integration, but what else have you been thinking of?
I mean, there are two different sides on this whole topic, I think. On the one hand, what you can do with all that stuff is actually really great. On the other hand, as an open source developer, I have also my concerns in terms of how much do you want to give your application or whatever in the hands of a company like Microsoft. Although one has to say that the features they provide are actually great, and also concerning the personal, the security of personal data, this is also a topic that should be deeply discussed, I guess.
Maybe also if I add to this, this graph API is very wide. And we have there a pretty simple way to extend other functionality from the MS Graph API, including all of this file storage and so on. It's more or less, it's based on an infrastructure plus a registry for new methods, which is, I think, straightforward. I mean, for adding, let's say, core functionality, let's say the content repository, to the thing, it's sometimes it's not to blame in this case Microsoft, but it's different in cloud environments, the local environments, because you're starting some kind of a request, but this request will take a while. But will take a while means, first of all, you submit it and you get an answer back, it says okay. But if you assume afterwards that this is okay, it means it is created, it's not true. I mean, you have to poll, it's really finished, whatever. And with this afterwards, you have to deal, what does it mean for other assumptions? I mean, if I have a page where you return the list of the uploaded files, you have to deal there as well. I mean, it has some kind of consequences at the end for the users of the thing. I mean, if you have your own dedicated package, which does this, where the user expects things not to appear immediately, or where you can block until it's there finally, it's different. But not sure if we wanted to do it for core applications on different places. But I think uploading files is certainly an easy thing, and I would do it as a different, let's say, listing place, and you are very experienced OpenSES programmer and much longer OpenSES programmer than I am. Therefore, it's not much work to do it. But it's just some reluctance on integrating it very deeply into the system. And it's not only about Microsoft, there are also competitors who have more or less the same functionality with other idiosyncrasies, which also sometimes complex.
I would never integrate it into OpenACS core. I was just thinking about like have a Microsoft's Office 365 package and which offers this functionality.
Makes perfectly sense.
Good question. Actually, two small questions. One about OpenID support of
yes,
and the other one, can this also work or as a provisions for to being an OpenID provider?
Concerning your first question, I mean, for example, Microsoft uses a combination here of OAuth2 and OpenID, and OpenID is of course based on OAuth, so there might be some more work to do, depending on the specifics of OpenID. But of course, this should be possible. And concerning your second question, I didn't understand it acoustically. There are indeed some procs in the XOAuth package. However, I guess they are not production ready. It's the OAuth server procs.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you have interest on this? I mean, we can just simply think about how to set it up. I mean, as we can program many things, the day is long. But it makes more sense if there's somebody who has needs for this.
I would have needs in my product company. Possibly.
I see. But I think it certainly makes sense. That, I mean, the authentication and also authorization of any kind of object is very powerful in OpenSS. And many external tools don't have it. I mean, you can go to some commercial cloud providers, and it's amazing how little access control they provide. And providing them with some mechanisms to use this kind of mechanism would also provide for them a really big value add. Malte?
Should the key code, have you thought about integration with Keycloak? Because you mentioned Microsoft Office 3 Azure and 365. I'm wondering about Keycloak as well, because that would be an alternative to writing your own identity management system within OpenACS. You could just install a different open source package to handle this.
As far as I'm a member of the Learn team, we haven't thought about this.
You
haven't thought? Yes. Maybe there were some considerations in these directions before.
It's just also a similar answer to before. It's a question of demand and possibilities. I think digging into the Microsoft world is also getting more interesting these days, because the Azure cloud is getting so many new functionalities, and it will not take long until Azure cloud provides good access to GPT-4 or whatever, and probably it is something which is there will be a need for this on the short range.
Well, as you are supporting OAuth, you just set up a Keyclock server where you manage the user base and you can have your own OpenX authenticated against it. So that would be, there is no need for integration because you already do OAuth2.
I mean, with the only small caveat, I mean, all of this XAuth of the OAuth thing is that there are RFCs, but people do not tend to care about this. The basic understanding is always the same. All of these errors are the same, but also large provider, such as, for example, also Google, they have the idea that this URL is different here and this return is others. And in this case, you have to, I mean, there are a lot of details. Therefore, it's sometimes more of work and you find it out when you do it. Okay, thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you.